intro, Sav. Thanks again, Thomas Erba, for doing such an amazing job for Wisdom in Golf and Golf WRX.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
So this is the time of year, typically, I get students that come to see me where they've lost a little bit of their edge. And typically, when they lose their edge, they hit a couple of weirwood shots, and then members of their entourage, family, friends, maybe other instructors, start pointing out defective body parts.
Or this is what you're doing wrong, and that's what you're doing wrong.
Yeah, you're so defective. So then they come back, and then I look at their swings, and the freedom is gone. It's very tentative. It's very timid. It looks very protected. And I go, okay, nobody shoots low scores, you know, anywhere between 59 and 65. Mm. Nobody ever shoots scores like that being careful or trying to think their way through. It just doesn't happen. Mm-mm. So what's the remedy? Well, if you understand that the human machine itself, the two enemies to freedom, is you being careful and you preparing to be careful. And all it takes is your nemesis hole. And, you know, I parred the first six holes and then I get to my nemesis hole and I pull it dead left. I just had a student just recently say that. I'm going, okay, what was your focus on the tee? Not pulling it left.
Yeah. I mean, at the Royal, you'll get a couple of those holes that just are sticky in your mind.
Yeah, they're a little, they get under your skin.
Yeah, they make you think a lot more, for sure.
Because you're like, oh, I've done this so many times on this hole. And remember, that's all you remember.
Yeah.
I remember a cool story that, one of Mo Norman's cool stories. He's playing a match, and they catch up to a group ahead, and they got a nice rhythm going. And Mo's on the verge of, you know, putting his opponent away. And they're on a par four, and the par four is a driver and a wedge. So it's Mo's honor. Mo hits pitching wedge.
Off the tee?
Off the tee. And his opponent goes, what the heck, right, Mo?
Yeah.
And then Mo casually takes his driver out on the fairway, knocks it on the green, and
oh, that's some serious rolls mind. That's some serious mind games right there.
Right?
That's some serious mind games.
So could you imagine the opponent off the tee box going, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
What a way to put somebody away, right?
Yeah,
that is crafty.
That is the final dagger through the heart.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I can't imagine the mind games that, you know, the good players, you know, put on their opponents. Right?
This is driving a wedge, driving a wedge.
Yeah.
So I hit my wedge. What's the big deal?
Yeah, he's on a different level.
What's your problem?
Yeah.
Right? Because he just didn't want to wait.
Yeah, that just messes with my head too. Right? And I'm like, wow, I can't imagine. In a pressure situation like
that's
that.
That's it. Right? So he makes his opponent wait. Oh, yeah. So the opponent's on the tee box. Now he's got to wait. And he's thinking about it. He's stewing over that.
Yeah.
What the hell? Is he trying to show me what's going on, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Imagine the mind-bending games going on in that head.
That's pretty cool.
So I get an example. What about on hole number six? You know, Royal.
That's the first hole that I thought of when you were telling that story.
Exactly. So it's a 3-wood or a driver and a wedge if you place it really well. Mm-hmm. I go, well, why not just hit 8-iron off the tee? I mean, 8-iron off the tee would be a piece of cake, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you
get it to the top of the hill.
Yeah, but you have to clear the corner a little bit.
Yeah, you just hit it. I mean, if you hit 8-iron right center of the fairway, then you got a 6-iron over to the green. Mm-hmm. No big deal. Crazy, huh? Mm-hmm. So if you have a nemesis hole, like switch it up and just don't switch it up
a little. Do it a lot.
Do it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have fun with it.
Yeah. You can like switch up the core memory that you have with the hole.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So that's number one. But you know, when they come back in, we remind them that, hey, if you're careful, you're asking your brain to shut the body down. And if that happens, well, you're just going to hit yourself twice in the swing and really not enjoy that swing because you're hanging on for dear life. And then what ends up happening after that is you start forcing because you couldn't finish the backswing. You're all tight. Now you got to help it. So you're steering and you're forcing. Mm-hmm. So nothing good's going to come out of that. So we have to open up the swing, gather full range of motion so we could get full whipping action in the direction that you want to start it. So we call it precision abandon. Mm-hmm. As long as you're delivering in the direction that you want to start the ball, that's what's going to give you the precision. Mm-hmm. And you have to do it. I mean, you've got no choice. There is no other way. You've got to free it up.
Yeah. I think of hole 16 on Quebec mm-hmm. when you talk about that because you literally need 3 perfect shots on that hole, essentially, for the majority of players.
If you lay up, it's not a big deal. I mean, you could play it as a 3-shot par 5, and it's really not a big deal.
Well, you have to. The only time on 16 of Quebec.
Yeah, no, that's par 5.
Yeah. I'm talking like the majority of people here.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. So you just hit a little fairway wood to the corner, and then you hit a short iron to a short iron layup.
But it's
and then you got
narrow.
A wedge. It's narrow.
It's narrow, yeah. So it puts you.
And you got to be on the proper side of the fairway.
Exactly.
Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of the holes at TPC Sawgrass. Mm. So, but it is a very rewarding hole.
When you play it right.
When you play it right, and you play it, you strategize, you get a beautiful reward.
You know what we noticed yesterday, too?
What?
It's the 12th handicap hole on the Quebec.
No way.
Which was shocking. Because I'm like,
what's number one handicap? Two?
Two.
What's number two handicap?
12.
12. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That should be inverted, reversed.
I would say. Yeah. Cause
based on how they're playing right now.
Two plays like a fair golf hole. There's nothing wrong with that hole.
No, there isn't.
It is a beautiful hole.
Yeah,
I actually love the way that looks.
I think 16 should be in the top 5 at that course, on that course.
Yeah,
I would say. It's 12th. I was like, wait, no, what?
12, all you got to do is put a stick of dynamite in it. That's all.
No, I'm saying 12th handicap hole.
Oh, okay.
I was like, huh?
No. Well, maybe because it's a par 5. I don't know.
It's bizarre.
It is. It is, because, I mean, you could be in a lot of trouble on that hole.
On all 3 shots. Yes. We played it yesterday, and that was my blow-up hole.
It was?
Yeah, it was. Aww.
What'd you do off the tee?
I pushed it
left. What were you hitting?
Driver off. I was playing from the blue tees.
Okay, but you don't need driver off that tee box. You don't need driver off the tee box.
I like to try and cut.
Whoa.
The little edge there.
You gotta cut the little edge.
Because otherwise,
and then pay the price.
I know, but it's
a steep price.
It's fairway wood off the tee, and then fairway wood to the next corner.
No, you don't need to hit fairway wood to the next corner. A little 5-iron will do. Yeah. It's 5-wood, 5-iron wedge. That's the way you play that hole. If you're in an event and you got to put a score on that hole, it's fairway wood off the tee.
Yeah.
You just was trying to have fun, and then the hole blew up in your face.
It really did. It really did.
Although you've been suffering from you actually are suffering from long COVID.
It's brutal.
When did you get diagnosed?
It'll be 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So on Thursday.
So if it's over a month, you're officially long COVID.
Because I still have no taste or smell.
Yeah. And you feel run down.
I have no energy.
Yeah.
Like when I played in the women's league on Wednesday, when you came to see us.
Yeah.
Because our shotgun hole was the furthest part of the golf course.
Yes.
And just the thought of like getting out there, playing the round and then finishing on the furthest hole and then having to walk all the way back. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to last the whole day.
Yeah.
And that thought never crosses my mind.
I know.
And when you came up to me, I was literally almost in tears being like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this today.
Well, they drove you out there.
Yeah, they drove us out there, but then we walked. We walked back.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. That was a long walk.
It is a long walk.
Yeah. It's like a 25-minute walk.
Especially when you're not playing.
Yeah. And we, all of us were like, I don't care who's on the golf course right now. We're cutting straight through the middle of the course.
Peekaboo.
We are not doing, we're not doing the roundabout.
Yeah. Peekaboo. Yes. So the next thing I want to talk about is, many of you have seen our videos. You say, oh, look at that grass whip. That makes so much sense. Mm. But then you don't do it. And you don't acquire the skill. Mm. And, you know, you got to take the time, get yourself a grass whip. You can order one online, usually at a hardware store. Those are usually between 20 and 40 bucks. Mm. And then you can order one from us at wisdomandgolf.com. And we have a golf-related grass whip, which is fabulous also for your release. And then, you know, you cut grass, and then you cut some tees, and then you cut through a tee with the ball on it and watch the ball fall to the ground, and then realize, oh, you're actually, when you cut grass, the ball meets the face and leaps into the air. Mm-hmm. And then when you get really good at the skill of cutting grass, you can relax.
Well, that's why I often say in these podcasts, like, you have to really commit to one of the tasks that we have.
Yes.
And get good at doing that task with repetition, because you can't just try it out like one or two times for like 10 minutes at a time and be like, oh, that's not working.
Till the cows come home, people.
You gotta like really commit to it.
Sink your teeth.
Yeah.
And it's so worth it, because every rep that you do with a grass whip is a positive rep. Mm-hmm. It is something that's going to actually help you. Mm-hmm. And then the brain starts to myelinate, you know, the conduits.
Well, it's like
to
anything
do that
in life, right? Like, you have to put the reps in, mm-hmm, no matter what it is. Reps at work, reps in another sport.
You don't want reps at, you know, body parts.
Productive reps.
Yes,
productive you find reps. But I'm saying, like, if with anything in life, to really get good at something, you have to put the time in.
And then when it comes to competition, when you actually have an acquired skill and you've been able to plug it into your game, this acquisition of skill creates calm. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
You're going, hey, I got this. I can do this. Mm-hmm. And then the calmness gives you patience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when they say, you know, I was patient out there today. Mm-hmm. And most of you listening to that are going, how in the world do I do that? I got to put my elbow here. I got to put my knee there. I got to make sure my head stays down. And I got to make sure I turn my wrist. I don't flip. And, you're off. You got this laundry list of things to do. And you get over the ball. You're so antsy. All you want to do is get it over with quickly just to get rid of that anxiety. Mm-hmm. That's not patience. No. Right? So acquire a skill. Mm-hmm. We've got the goods. So we've got, you know, you go to wisdomandgolfpremium.com and then just type in the search box task. Yeah. And then look at all our tasks, find the one, then you go, oh, I could do that one.
Right.
Well, then hop in, go to it, get really good at it. When you're good at the task, you'll be good at golf. Mm-hmm. And then we want to hear about it.
Yeah, you got to give it a chance.
And also, once you get good at something, it also doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect 100% of the time.
Yeah. Right.
You
got to make some hiccups. Like,
yeah, there's hiccups along the way, right? Yeah. And that doesn't mean that all of a sudden that task isn't working for you anymore.
Yeah, you just got to find the one that matches your feel, essentially.
Your feel, your personality.
Mm-hmm. Your perception of it, yeah.
And you're absolutely right, Sav. I mean, you look at darts. Mm-hmm. You got world champion dart thrower. He gets, you know, he'll have an off day.
Yeah.
And he's not hitting the bullseye or the 60
and you're
point
totally
line
allowed to have off days. Everything's not going to be perfect 100% of the time. That just doesn't exist.
It's peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
But peaks and valleys going in the proper direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that dart player who's going to throw darts into the bullseye an hour a day for 2 weeks is going to have improvement naturally over the long run. You don't see it immediately.
Yeah.
You don't see it after the first week. Mm-hmm. You may not even see it after the second week, but then it's demonstrated to you and you go, hey, look at your spray pattern now and look at what it was 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's so enlightening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you see it that way. And that's why eventually, you know, you stop missing the green because, you know, you missed the green by 10 yards and then you missed the green by 5 yards. You don't notice the difference.
No, you just know that you missed the green.
Right. And then you missed the green by a couple of yards and now you're on the fringe, you know, you start noticing. Mm-hmm. And then you start hitting the green. Whoa, hey, I got more greens in regulation.
Yeah.
And then you start hitting the green at 10 feet from the flag and, you know, or 20 feet from the flag and then 10 feet. And then you start putting a couple of kick and birdies in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's how it works. You want to derail the process? Start thinking. start thinking about what body part you want to place where.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the video that we did today. I have one of my online students who has been instructed to come, you know, in the past, and he actually worked at it a lot, you know, going from the frying pan into the fire. Over the top swing turns, you know, way too into out. So you imagine a golfer who's trying to chop a tree down, but brings their head way out in front of the tree.
Right.
And then tries to put the axe straight into the tree. Mm. Kind of difficult.
Yeah, just a bit.
Typically what's going to happen is they'll shave bark down the tree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and bear the axe into the ground. So in order to not come over the top, we're instructed to get deep arms. That's the latest trend on tours. Mm-hmm. Deep arms in the backswing.
I see it all the time on social media too.
The deep arms?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I got to be polite, of course. It's just the state of the game. But I mean, that's got to be one of the worst things you'll ever do to your golf swing. Because it's an absolute collapse.
It just doesn't look natural at all.
Yeah.
No, it's an absolute collapse of the arc of the swing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some people take it literally and then it becomes, your anatomy becomes discombobulated.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you would never use that technique to chop a tree down. You would never use that technique as a baseball hitter.
Right.
I mean, you'd be tar and feathered out off the team if you tried to hit a baseball that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You would never use that technique to have a two-hand backhand tennis backhand.
Right.
Mm.
You know, unless you're going to do a super top spin backhand, you know, lob shot over the player, you know, and try to defeat them at the net, you know, that way.
Yeah, I can see a rib injury coming out of that thinking as well.
So it's basically adding a big, like the worst Band-Aid I've ever seen, mm-hmm. to something that was already fundamentally not right focus-wise.
Right. Mm.
So if you're trying to, as a lumberjack, if you want to split wood, if you got a log in front of you that you stand up and you want to split that piece of wood, mm-hmm. well, that's a perfect over-the-top move.
Correct.
That's what you need. You need the over-the-top move. Mm-hmm. If you want to put more momentum in there, you're going to take it way inside, come over the top, and give it a go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're going to take the tree down, well, then all of a sudden you're tilting behind the tree, you're getting behind the tree, mm-hmm. and now you've got this nice wide arc delivering the axe through the side of the tree.
Right.
And that's a video we did today. And Moo, I mean, you've never taken an axe to a tree before, yet you look like the perfect lumberjack today.
Right. Like you explained it clearly to me to be able to visualize the task in mind, right? And I was able to kind of get lost in the task and then allow myself to kind of...
It was pretty clear.
Yeah, it was pretty clear. Yeah, I figured it out right away. And then in my mind, I was like, oh, this looks just like a golf swing in terms of...
Right?
In
respect, you could feel it.
In respect to... You know, what I've experienced over the years.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then the other video that we're posting the week after is...
The ground forces.
The ground forces.
That one made a lot of sense.
right?
With the sledgehammer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, Sav actually likes one of my props.
Listen. Sometimes.
She doesn't like my my lunge whip.
No, I hate it.
She hates the lunge whip.
Yeah, so
I know. It's got some past connotations from decades ago, and I get, you know, we're trying to be politically correct.
We just don't want to offend anybody.
I know. And you're very good at helping us do that because, hey, I'm getting up there. I'm going to be 57 this year, and I have a lot of baggage. Right?
I got to keep you up to date on everything.
And it's funny how I'm the same way with my dad. My dad will come up with something, well, Dad, we can't say that anymore, dude. I'm sorry. Yeah. And you're helping me. You're helping continue the trend.
It's a generational thing, you know?
It's a generational gap.
Yeah.
But the sledgehammer you enjoyed.
Mm-hmm, it makes sense.
Why? Because if you, let's say, take a sledgehammer, we had a nice 6-pound sledgehammer, and you let it hang under your shoulders, and you want to heave it downrange. Did you enjoy that move?
Yeah, I did. It was fun. It was
nice chucking it down.
You were whispering to me after being like, this is a good one for my long drive training.
Yeah, it was a good stimulation in terms of, you know, you feel a heavy load, and then when you go to, say, a shaft, a driver, or an iron,
yep,
you feel like you can whip the snot out of that the tool, right?
Well, he's using the terms now, too. Whip the snot out of it.
But yeah, I felt like I could definitely put a lot more heft behind the ball, a lot more mass, and get that pause, and then engage the weight shift properly as well.
You got a lot of time to engage that kinetic chain.
And he was doing drivers afterwards.
Yeah.
And I could see the difference in the swing, because at the long drive events we were talking about how he needs a little bit more abandon.
Yes.
In his swing, and when he was hitting the drivers afterwards, it was definitely more abandoned.
Yeah, it was.
About that, huh?
You could see that, like.
All we have to do is do videos together, and it takes care of the lesson. You know,
don't need to do lessons
anymore. You could see that, like, more of a heave into, like, an unintentional pause.
That's what we needed to get into, a little more heave into the backswing.
Yeah.
And then let it set.
I wasn't letting it set. I was jumping on it too early, and then the rhythm was a little too.
Yeah.
Too rushed.
Do you remember the scientific term for that pause at the top of the backswing?
No. I can't do it as fast as Dad.
That was adorable.
I've heard it so many times.
No. That's it. So you got a couple of more nanas at the top of the backswing.
Yeah.
And it feels so natural.
Yeah,
waiting for that kind of weight. I mean, you got 6 pounds tugging at your shoulder sockets at the end of a longer handle.
Yeah.
Then, and this is the cool part. There is no way you can use ground forces with a flat swing. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, players like Matt Kuchar. That he's got great technique. You know, I love the way he loads his arm club unit, but because he's got the arm club unit too far behind him, he can't take advantage of the ground forces. And that's why he's a very short hitter for his size.
Right.
Right. It reminds me of Nick Faldo at the time, right? Nick Faldo was a professional positional player. Mm-hmm. And because he was so positional, he was very short for his size. I mean, he's a big boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but he just could not get, you know, a lot out of his swing because it was too manipulated.
Right.
And that's what people don't understand about the PGA Tour. You got the best, most seamless athletes out there that are going to make everything look good.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And they're able to make it look polished, and you're thinking, okay, that's what we need to do because the best players are doing that.
I found that it's more prominent in golf that way, just because everyone's looking for that next best.
I'll take Matt Wolff's swing all day long I take Nick Faldo's swing.
True. Yeah, with Wolff's, it looks more athletic, looks more powerful.
He looks like Zorro.
Yeah,
it's just unique, right? Like he has his own personality.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's true. That's his swing. Yeah, that's
and
it.
Like. There's a lot of guys on tour where you're like, you can identify whose swing that is. even by just like the silhouette.
Yeah.
Matt Wolf
is the Sultan of Swing. That is the, if you look at the definition of sling or swing, that's what should show up in the dictionary.
Yeah. And it's fun to watch in terms of how well he uses the ground forces.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got a nice pause in his swing too.
Yeah.
You see it.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's, I mean, you can't rush something like that.
Mm-mm. No.
But it's just good. Imagine a small kid, like, remember the movie Excalibur, the cartoon movie, and they had this little scrawny kid who took the sword out of the enclave, right, out of the stone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he was so heavy that he pulling up on the handle and then the tip of the sword would follow and then it would wobble into place, right?
Yeah.
So you could see that as a junior, that's how he developed the golf swing. Like John Daly has this super mega overswing. Mm-hmm. That's because when he was a kid, he played with men's clubs.
Okay.
And he made his, that swing got so long because the club was so heavy for his size.
Yeah.
He learned how to swing that way.
Yeah,
people just don't understand that. I mean, those swings are created from the anatomy of the day, of that time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And as a kid, you mold everything around that.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson's, top of backswing.
I was just thinking about that.
Buckle of the wrist. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of kids that are 5-6 years old trying to swing dad's clubs, and they don't have the strength to keep everything in place, and then things tend to buckle.
Yeah, that's right.
And so Dustin Johnson basically learned how to play with that buckled left wrist.
That's a strong wrist.
And there's reasons for those things, right? But a lot of people take it way too literally.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing people teaching bowing the wrist. I'm like, but that doesn't apply to the majority of golfers. Like, people are going to really hurt themselves if they're starting to bow their wrists. Like, if I tried to do that,
I
would break my wrist.
Yeah.
Like, no freaking question about it. Like, it makes me so upset to see that technique being taught because of how much of a risk to injury that is for so many people who are going to take that really literally.
Well, do you see how many people have that band around their forearm because they're suffering from permanent golfer's elbow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is one of the deals. I mean, if you take your wrist and you bow it significantly, where do you feel the tension? You feel it all the way up the forearm, right into the elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So could you imagine pounding golf balls all day that way if you don't have the strength?
Yeah.
You're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah. And like in the golf industry, not a lot of things make me upset because I'm just like, oh, it is what it is kind of thing. Right. And like we do our own thing. But I saw that and I was like, that's like going to hurt people.
It's trying to square up the club face.
Yeah, that's what it was for.
So neutral grip.
Yeah.
Square face is off the planet to the right for a right-handed golfer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That club face is so dynamically open, it's not even funny. So in order for certain teachers that think, hey, that grip's got to be neutral and that club face has got to be square at address, and we'll just learn how to square it up during the swing. And that's one of the methods they use.
But I don't understand and then they say set up properly.
They say that, hey, in the downswing, make sure you bow the wrist in the downswing to square up the face before. And this is kind of, I saw this in your swing move.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it in my swing. You know, I'm like, my club face is wide open at the top of the backswing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way my arms work, I got deep, deep lag. I've got much more limber wrists than the average person. Mm-hmm. I started playing golf when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Played a lot of baseball. So, my wrists have a deep range of motion like Sergio Garcia has.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Bubba Watson. So what happens when the kinetic chain engages, and this is what a lot of people don't get. If you take a baseball hitter, you're waiting for the ball from the pitcher. The bat is sitting vertically.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's the lightest place to put the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you commit to the pitch, the trail arms elbow will lead. And when that happens, it sits the bat down. It just flattens the bat. It shallows it right out. So, and we never have to think about that. So when it shallows out and when that elbow leads, in my case, when that elbow leads, it's got such a depth to it that it actually bows my left wrist.
Slightly. But it's never intentional.
But it doesn't collapse it.
Yeah.
It's a very different. So it bows it slightly. I have a strong grip. It's not a super strong grip like yours.
No.
Moo has a stronger grip than me. So I would say you're super strong.
Yeah.
Moo is strong and I'm on the strong side of strongish, right? Because I still love my lumberjack cutting through the tree and my anatomy is designed and positioned to do that.
But the best part about your teaching, and I've heard it from so many people that we meet who have taken lessons from you, is that you just bring out the best in their own unique swing. You never try to, like, change them into, like, this cookie-cutter golf swing that people are trying to achieve. Like, right. Me, you, and Moo, we all have different swings.
Absolutely. I love your swing. I'd love to have your swing.
Right.
But I'm stuck with my swing. I don't have your anatomy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've been blessed by, you know, a combination of me and your mom.
Yeah.
And, man, you look pretty out there. You look graceful. And it's a very enviable swing, but my swing performs, you know, when people come out and, you know, we haven't been on the road in a while. And a lot of the students that saw us in Connecticut, that's one of the things they wanted to, hey, I want to see you hit a shot, Sean. Because, I mean, you know, we keep seeing you doing these shots on, you know, we see your shot tracer afterwards on the GC quad. And we think, you know, you always have a doubt in your mind, and is that really true and whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they realize, oh, you were actually being conservative.
Yeah.
Because then they see the pep that comes off my club face and the zip that comes off of it, and it's the zip that you'll see on the PGA Tour on a regular basis.
Right.
It's not the zip that you'll see Cameron Champ and Munashe and Bryson DeChambeau, but it is the zip that you'll see most of the guys who carry the ball 280 to 300 yards off the tee, because that's when I open up and I'm feeling good. Like we went and played a tournament for one of my buddies, Mark Prevost. Mark, if you're listening, buddy, shout out to you. And they do the Prevost golf tournament every year, and we switched places this year. This beautiful 9-hole course. You know, remember the 9-hole in Winter Park?
Yes.
It's as gorgeous as that.
Really?
Oh, I'm telling you, next time we go to Montreal, we got to play that course.
What's it called?
It's called, not Whispering Pines, it's called...
Brain Fart.
Pines.
Yeah.
And something special pines. Whispering, whatever.
Okay, cool.
W pines. Okay. And the owners are indigenous, and they're in the reservation there on the south shore of Montreal near Kanawaki is an amazing golf course there. It's a beautiful private club. So it's a beautiful area in Chateauguay. And so the owners of this of one of the
of the golf course.
I never gamble, so.
Oh, casinos?
A casino. There we go.
Yeah.
The owners of one of the casinos decided they wanted to make a golf course. And the restaurant that's there is absolutely gorgeous. They put an Italian restaurant in there. And, Dan, my best friend Dan, who I was playing with Mark, he orders this Caesar salad like at 11:30. We're the only ones in the restaurant.
Yeah,
and it was spectacular, right? I'm going, where did this come from? And at a golf course, you know, so the potential is awesome. The fairways are all bent grass. Okay. Greens are bent. They were rolling at a 13 on the stimp meter.
That's faster.
Like
than
I went out and shot 200 par right there on the front. Every putt held its line. It was so much fun.
Yeah, that's so much fun.
And then we get on, you know, in the afternoon, and we get there, and the first hole is like 290 to the flag, and I'm thinking, ah, I'll just hit a smooth driver. There's no wind. Mm-hmm. Smooth driver to the front of the green, and I carried the center of the green. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, here you are trying to lay up.
Yeah.
And trying to hit smooth, and the kinetic chain engages, and the darn thing explodes in your hands, and off it goes, and you think, I did four putt. Because you don't want to be there, okay? The pin was all the way up front, and I was all the way at the back of the green, and the greens have some slope. So I'm not going to explain how I four putted, but I can tell you that it was really downhill. And my second putt, I left. But my first putt, I left short. Yeah. The second putt raced 8 feet by, and I missed the comebacker. You know, my favorite description ever of a player who four putted in a major competition, Seve Ballesteros. The reporter asked Seve, "What about that four putt, Seve? Because you know he didn't win the event." He says, "Oh, yeah, I putt, I miss. I putt, I miss. I putt, I miss. I putt, I make." Next question. Right? Yeah.
Totally unfazed.
Totally unfazed, because that's the way it transpired. I was trying to make the putt.
Yeah.
I didn't make the putt. So I tried to make the putt again.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was really that innocent.
Right.
There was no pressure. There was no, oh, my God, scratching my... I mean, you're talking about Seve Ballesteros here.
Yeah.
The guy was a wizard around the greens. I remember him beating Tom Lehman in the World Golf Match Play Championship. Tom Lehman hit 17 greens in regulation that day.
That's good.
Guess how many Seve had?
I think you told me this story before. Was it like four?
Four. Four. Four greens in regulation.
Yeah.
And he beat him.
That's insane.
Like mentally. Tortured him.
I bet you're watching the guy just miss the greens. It's like, oh, this guy's driving. Yeah, yeah. I can
fairway
bet.
Green missed the birdie putt. Fairway green missed the birdie putt. That was Tom.
Right.
And his Seve problem. Was in the trees, punch out of the trees, get on the green, make the putt.
Yeah. That
right?
It's like
in the rough, in the bunker, on the green, make the putt.
Yeah.
Like all day. Just wore you out.
Different style of course management.
Big time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, you get your money's worth that way, you know?
That's true. Yeah, you get a show, yeah.
But, I mean, I've never seen Tom Lehman so dejected. I mean, he was so...
I mean, that hurts a little.
A little?
A lot.
It's like, you know, going to a boxing match and getting a beat down by Mike Tyson. That's... Right. Man, that is like really, that was a harsh lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
bet. That when it brings to mind the famous saying, a person who can chip and putt is a match for anyone. Mm-hmm. A person who cannot is a match for no one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's golf.
That's true. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing greater for your confidence than when you can get up and down from anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you go, I just need to put it next to the green somewhere and I'll get up and down.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, well, that takes all the pressure off my long game.
Right.
And now you can free it up. So there's level two. First, acquire a skill.
Yeah.
And secondly, get a good short game.
Yeah.
And then you're good.
Yeah.
We're good to go after that. So yeah, that's it, man. Anything else you want to add?
No, we should save it for the next one.
Save it for the next one. How are we on time here?
40.
We're 40 minutes. You guys are probably at work by now.
Yeah.
And or back at the house. And so we're going to let you go. And we hope you appreciate our little, you know, golf's imperfections.
Perfect
imperfections.
Right.
And we'll see you next week.
All the best.
Take care.
So jacked, we got a good tune.